Welcome back to the incomparable rewatch of the first season of Ted Lasso. This is the run-up to season two, which debuts July 23rd on Apple TV+. I'm tonight's host, Kelly Gamont. The rest of the time, you can hear me on the incomparable on I Want My MCU TV. My starting lineup for this episode is brunette Oscar the Grouch, Sam Adams, from the very nearly weekly Watchers of the Plus. Hi, Sam.
That was the sexiest fucking thing I've ever heard in my life.
All right. Well, I win. Good night, everybody.
I had to. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so glad you're here because we got that out of the way right out of the gate. Now the rest of the episode won't be weird.
What's that Watchers of the Plus energy for you?
I'm here for it. Also with me tonight, I have Tom Bridge, the independent. I mean, Tom Bridge, the Mac Admins podcast. Hi, Tom.
I'm still laughing at that last one. I can't top that, so I'm not even going to try. Thanks. It's so great to be here. I'm really thrilled to be in the seat tonight.
I'm so happy to have you with us. And fresh off winning an Oscar at the ESPYs for her performance of, give me the ball. I want the ball. Give me the ball. I have Aline Sims. Hi, Aline.
I would like to thank the Academy and, I don't know, Ted Lasso.
Respect. We would all like to thank Ted Lasso. We appreciate him. We're here to discuss episode 9, All Apologies, the penultimate episode of the first season. Okay, we just have a quick checklist for everyone. Do you have your pink fuzzy pillow?
Yes, okay. I have Check. My pink fuzzy pillow.
Check. All right, and a row of pints in front of you?
Mm-hmm.
All right, because, mm-hmm. you know, natural caregiving. So let's go. We start out with a nice shot of a recycling bin, at least. In my neighborhood, the big blue ones with the flip tops are the recycling bins. So there's a recycling bin full of ice water and very grumpy footballer, Roy Kent.
How is that a thing? Like, I mean, I did the sports. You know, I did the sports when, and, you know, we certainly dealt with all sorts of treatment and stuff like that. I have never submerged my entire body in ice water before.
Yeah, that's something I've only known American football players to do. Because I've it's funny hearing somebody else. I don't feel like there's been a lot of sports fans on this podcast, and so it's kind of neat coming at this from a sports fan perspective because it's just another A plus on the Ted Lasso report card. Because even as a sports fan, you go, oh, they get this right, they get that right. Even the ridiculous sports commentary at the beginning, because I don't know if you guys noticed the beginning. There's some stats on the board, and it's like first 24 games, last 9, and the first. Assists, turnovers, and goals. But then the last one, I had to write it down. It was game losing, season crushing own goals.
Yes, soul crushing own goals was the bit that caught my eye. We get him. We have a moment of Roy on the rocks with this bit. And the thing that I loved in this one was particularly, I loved seeing the screen with soul crushing own goals. But also the close shot where we just get Roy's, I'm making hand motions like anyone on a podcast can see that, but we get like just Roy's eyes and the top of his head up out of the water. And behind him is Danny Rojas, which I think is Spanish for ray of effing sunshine in the background. My high school Spanish is a little rusty, but he's like in the background walking just like, oh, yeah. And he's just, and it's like it feels like the opposite ends of an entire spectrum, like just between the two of them. And that shot of the two of them together.
So do you know what Roy, do you know what Danny is singing?
He's singing the theme song in Spanish.
He's singing the theme song in Spanish.
Yes. I thought it was. I wasn't sure. I hoped it was.
The first time I heard it, I went, wait, do I know that song? Because I'm very good at, I heard that at that thing that time. And so I had to listen to it a couple of times. But yes, he's singing the same. And I love the little wink like that, because I don't think we really get a lot of meta moments in this show. I can only think of like two, and this is the other one.
There are a couple things that kind of...
Yeah.
But just a couple. Oh. You're right.
The only other one that comes to mind immediately is when they're trying to think of what to call themselves as like the relationship squad, and they go through a couple of iterations and somebody goes Proud Boys and they start hurling all over again. That's like the only other one that I can think of that's sort of a wink to like anything outside the world of football. But so those are the two that made me chuckle because I was like, because I'm very good at recognizing that's a song I heard from somewhere. So that made me laugh a lot when I figured that out. So this is where we get a moment of Roy is feeling really sorry for himself. Ted is immune. They have a brief conversation. Ted just sort of refuses to accept Roy's bad mood, which is sort of funny. We don't spend a ton of time there, but we definitely get the setup for, like, also Roy is going to extreme measures by sitting in a tub full of ice water, which is a thing that sometimes happens in sports. Like, I see it in basketball. Cause it's a lot of, joint, like hip sure. and knee stuff. So I don't, right. I don't always see it, you know, in the recycling bin. It's usually like a tub so that it's like the bottom half of people are submerged. That's usually what I've seen in my extensive sports medicine experience. It's not that extensive. So we also had, then from there we cut to, Rebecca having a photo shoot in the locker room. Where she is apparently setting herself up to be the poster girl for girls in tiny purple power suits everywhere, which I very much enjoyed.
Yeah, the positivity of it all, and, you know, Ted trying to be, you know, an ally and stuff like that, you know, trying to, you know, talk to Rebecca mm-hmm. about this. And it's, you know, we get a lot of unfiltered Ted optimism in this episode. It's certainly a lot, yes. but, you know, it is at this point something we are used to and expecting.
Yeah. And Aline, this was a scene when we were sorting out starting lineups. This was one that I thought you and I would sort of have a moment over, which is, you know, the part where he says, like, a little girl somewhere is going to read this article, is going to read this thing. And silly and mysterious little girl somewhere is going to read this thing mm-hmm. and is going to say, my dreams are possible. And I was like, that's like a big fat underscore under a whole lot of things. And it was really nice to see that. I appreciated that take on it. And I like how Ted sort of introduces his own perspective to people. Like, and it's not just that it's optimistic all the time. It's just sometimes he sees something a little differently than someone else does. Like, Rebecca sort of sees it as part of her job, and she's like, there's only four of us. And she, like, names all the other
and
three
posh
women.
And Posh Spice, right?
Yeah. It's like
Victoria Beckham. Yeah.
Yeah. Her, two other first names, and Posh Spice. She's like, there are four of us. Here's the other three, which I thought was kind of funny.
I also really like that Ted is there with his, you know, optimism about little girls. And then, like, 5 minutes later, Keeley's talking about how girls are dark and mysterious.
Well, we get a couple of those this time. We get lines that rhyme, right? Like, so we get, you know, the little girls, which is, you know, both Ted and Keeley talking about little girls from different perspectives. We get the conversation later about the body being a miracle.
I do have that noted.
And then, of course, we get Ted with the callback to episode one, doing the Carlton.
Carlton.
And, you know, I never know how to behave when a grown man does the Carlton.
Carlton
in front of me.
And,
you know, yeah. I love that. And then, of course, we also get, you know, Nate and Ted's conversation about, you know, make sure to apologize to me in your dreams so that we're all right over there.
So we're good. We're good there too.
You took two of the notes right out of my notebook right there. I'm glad you brought it up.
I have a whole section on, like, lines that rhyme.
Yeah, like amazing callbacks where it's like the calling back to episode one of Keeley. And it's funny how it's like Keeley and Roy having the same perspective, whether it's beatboxing or doing the Carlton. And then that Ted is like, I don't even know if he necessarily believes in dream stuff, but he's just like, just to be on the safe side, you know, because I don't want
to be sure,
you know, just like apologize to me there too. So we're all good, you know? So it's like, wow, he's so positive that he doesn't even he doesn't believe anything's ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
The thing I really appreciate about Ted is that I don't think he is an unfettered optimist. I think that he is like an optimistic realist, if that makes sense. So he's all about taking, he's all about facilitating paradigm shifts to help people see situations as being not as bad as they seem for whatever reason. Yeah. But also, like, I think he sees things as they are, like, fairly objectively. And I think that his optimism is a choice. It's something that he chooses to bring to his relationships and his workplace. And that's something I really admire about him, because I'm not like that at all. So it's fun to see someone who takes this, like, I think of this situation as something really straightforward, and Ted is talking about it in ways that make it seem not so bad, or as a net win for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like the positive pragmatist in mm-hmm. Ted. Yeah. I think that's what I wrote down.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you see, just like, as he's being positive with everybody else, yet going through this devastating personal, like, tragedy, that he keeps this facade up with everybody else. I mean, it's not necessarily a facade. Maybe that's just how he feels about his work. But, you know, and that's one thing I didn't watch it right when it came out. I had to have a friend cajole me for about 3 months before I finally gave it a try. And then I burned through it in about 3 days. And it kind of struck me, knowing that he was going through a divorce personally while shooting this.
Yeah.
And being like, so like all those scenes just hit me like a ton of bricks. I'm like, the poor guy, he had to make this while he was going through this. So
yeah,
it just makes it even more kind of powerful that you're like, look at this guy going through all these things, but yet he's still trying to get everyone to see the bright side of things.
I mean, I guess that's one way to avoid therapy, but, you know, I mean, or at least get it for free. But, you know, because I spent a lot of time thinking about that, was that the catharsis in all of this had to be so substantial. There's a lot going on for him, for Ted, for Jason as a person, I'm sure, that, mm-hmm. that comes through in a lot of this. And I, you know, I love that. But, you know, we're just shy of one of my favorite lines of the entire run of the show. Which is the conversation between Rebecca and Keely in the footwear room.
There are a number of things to love in that particular
scene. You could love
in that particular scene. Yeah, I do appreciate a bunch of that. We get that because as Ted and Rebecca are having the conversation about how he could help somebody, some little girl somewhere, realize her dreams are possible, Keely pops in and needs to borrow Rebecca for a minute, hauls her off to a room full of used athletic footwear, and Rebecca is immediately punched in the face by that smell. I can only imagine. I had a brother in high school who wore a lot of, who like was never good at disinfection of his shoes. So yeah, I remember it better than I'd like. How's that?
I think she describes it well. Just funk.
Yeah. Feet. Just yeah. Feet. Hit just right in the face. Right. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Punched in the face with the smell of that room. And So Tom, take it away. Yeah.
I was going to say, it's not every day that you hear somebody called a right floppy cock. But that is absolutely what Keely calls Rebecca in this situation. And if we think about the show as a study in accountability and the ability of our friends to call us on our bullshit, sorry, Jason, for making you beep me. I don't know if you beep or not, but like, I mean,
we have a checkbox for explicit. So it'll be
excellent.
Fine.
Check that box, because when your friends can call you on your bullshit, that's where the power of your friendship happens. And I love the dynamic between Keely and Rebecca in this moment, because essentially it's the first time that Rebecca has to confront the fact that she cares what Keely thinks. And it is Keely saying, it reflects how I feel about you that you have not done any of this right. Mm-hmm. And I love that moment.
I did too. That
I thought it was
when
cool.
Just Rebecca's trying to give up and brush it off, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, and Keely says, "Well, you know," because she says, "Well, it's not going to change anything." And Keely says, "It'll change how I feel about you."
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And going back to what you said about, you know, kind of speaking, you know, truth to your friends, calling them out. It's the same way Ted did with Nate. At, you know, saying, hey, do you like when someone tells you you got spinach in your teeth or something like that? You know.
Yeah.
And his way of doing it is, can I tell you this first? Whereas Keely's a little more direct.
You know? And, you know, we think about the relationships here where, you know, this is a show about not saying what This is a show where people are saying what needs to be said, not what they want the other person to hear.
Yeah.
And I really love that frank honesty that comes from the friendship that exists there. We see it in the episode just prior, or two episodes prior, where, you know, Nate and Roy are right there in the middle of that locker room scene. And Roy is just breaking down Nate's ability to, you know, lean on his crutches and not have confidence in that moment, because he needs to have that coach's confidence when he's calling Roy out on the carpet. You know, about his anger and, you know, being so angry that, you know,
moment
you'd run with anger, you know, like you was angry at the grass.
You ran like you were mad at the grass. That's which is right. Such a good sentence in itself.
Not to steal another episode's thunder, but I feel like these are the kinds of moments that Ted Lasso gets right and gets strongly right, which is the interpersonal relationships and how these relationships don't just collapse under the weight of the confrontation, but surpass it and become strengthened by that relationship, and strengthened by that conflict. And I love that, because the last thing you want in those kind of moments is to be a shrinking violet in the face of criticism, or to, not be willing to say what needs to get said in the moment because you're afraid.
Well, I think part of that comes from everyone is coming at it from, it seems like there are very few words spoken in any episode of the season that are spoken in anger, where somebody really needs to hear something and the person who tells it to them is just like mad about it and blurts it out and yells it at them. I feel like we get one of the few angry interactions in this episode, but it's Rebecca and Rupert, and it's Slater. That's one of the few angry retort sort of interactions that we have, because everyone else is doing Sam, like you were saying, do you like when you have a friend that tells you you got spinach in your teeth? Because I'm here to tell you, you know, and having that, because he wants him to, because he's taken Nate to this thing and it's a big deal and he wants Nate to look nice. And he's coming at it from a place of love. Like, I want you to be better. Yes. And I want you to, and I want to help you do that. I have this thing that I can do for you and I'm offering that to you. And like in this episode, the thing that is offered, as we get into Rebecca's apology tour, is those apologies and the honesty about, like, I have to be brutally honest with you about this is my deal. And everybody does that. And like, we get one of those sort of honest moments right here in, and it's not even, Rebecca and Keeley as they're standing in that horrible footwear room. Nate walks in and says, I know women love shoes, but come on. Oh, God. Oh, I'm so sorry. That was terribly sexist. I'll get my coat. And basically just beats feet, you know, out the door. Like, I'll show myself out and just flees the scene. And I adore. And you know what I really love about him is he sort of gets his moment in this episode as well. Like, we get a moment of him sort of standing there and like, yeah, like I am of value and I contribute and I'm actually part of this team. Like, we get those things and we get, you know, we start to really see him come into his own in the scene, Tom, that you were referencing earlier about the roast me amigo sequence.
Yes.
which I really love. And again, not to steal another episode's thunder, but but having those moments where we see we get another facet of Nate, and we get a few of those from a few people here. We get, because from there, because again, like, everything comes from like this place of kindness, this place of love. Like, I want to help you, you know, I want to help you do whatever it is that you're trying to achieve.
Well, and I'm glad Tom brought up kind of accountability, because I feel like Ted's put in that same position too.
Yep.
And again, coming at this from a sports fan, like, just the buying of the suit thing is a huge thing. Like, I've seen it in baseball teams all the time where, like, two rookies make the team, a couple of veterans take them out to buy them some suits for road trips or whatever. So it's like, they get that right. And Coach Beard's right about, you know, Ted being selfish, and that he's choosing a player's feelings over what's best for the team. And, you know, it just rings very true. I mean, it's hard to bench a superstar. It's not an easy task. You know, those guys get a lot of rope and get to play bad for a long time before anything happens. And so I feel like that's where this episode really, you know, again, it just another A+ on the Ted Lasso scorecard, because it's just another thing that it's like, they didn't half arse it. They,
Yes. Another sports fan thing that I enjoy in this, because I have watched, I admit, like, full disclosure, I'm an NBA person. I watch a lot of basketball games. And one thing that you get at the end of a basketball game, just like the end of a football game or a baseball game or anything else that ends in ball game, you get the press conference. And so we get a moment in the press room, and we get Trent Krim. Is it the Daily Planet? Is that where he's from?
Oh, the Independent.
I love that Ted gives him the little jibe, like they're sort of like amigos now, and it warms my heart to watch that moment between the two of them, and to see how the press has sort of settled into this slightly more jovial relationship with Ted. Like, they appreciate the jokes he makes. They see, you know, when he's like, okay, all the introverts raise your hand, ha ha, none of you would have done that, you know. And when he has those moments with them, and they always make me laugh. And when we talked about episode 3, we just decided his name was, in fact, Trent Krim, the Independent.
He's just introducing himself by his entire name. It's cool.
I was bummed getting ready for this episode to see his name in print, because I had a fan theory that he was modeled after a local Bay Area sports writer that's initials are TK. And I was like, oh, his last name's with a C. Dang it.
Well, that doesn't mean your theory is incorrect. I mean,
he still could be a British Tim Kawakami.
See, he could. I think he could. So then, after the press room, Ted's in the locker room, and he gets double teamed by Nate and Beard about how it's time to bench Roy. And we have a conversation about bite marks and who and being paid to distribute.
I was gonna say, the kind you usually have to pay for is the quote, and it says, and that just that deadpan moment between Beard and Nate. It's just so clutch, because, you know, Beard is such a cipher, right? Like, there's nothing see about him that is unbelievable.
And every bit we get is a casual grenade, that one that he just sort of lobs out there and leaves.
He is fractally interesting, which means any one part of him is as interesting as the whole of him combined. And so every little thing that we get, you ask more questions. How did he become a chess player? How did he get paid to bite someone's in the butt? I mean, it's just, there's so many things about him that are just, I don't want them ever explained, because it's just more fun this way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I feel like if you've played enough sports, you've had a Coach Beard. And it's always this bearded, hard-ass coach that tells you just what you want to know. And you think he just, like, goes home and watches tape of the players and then comes back. And then as you slowly unpeel the onion, you realize he's just a person. But it's kind of the same thing where you're like, oh, he does chess? Okay, checkmate, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So, we'll get to that.
Yeah, he does an amazing Lady Gaga. You know, it's just he's got layers, you know?
Yes. Since you've brought that up, I would like to state for the record a bit of old business. If they ever do one of those Omaze giveaway, like, crazy ass contest things, if one of them becomes a night of karaoke with AFC Richmond, I will pay exorbitant sums of money to win that contest.
Yeah.
Because I want nothing more in life than to be out drinking and karaokeing with that group of people, because it sounds spectacular. Aline can back me on this.
Yeah. Yeah. Karaoke with Kelly is awesome.
So we get an interesting conversation, because Nate and Beard have come to the conclusion that Roy's days are numbered. We just need to figure out what the number is. And I think it's interesting that the two of them have come to this and go to Ted about it. I did like their approach on it, and how they sort of talked about, like, you know, he's been slipping. It just hasn't it just hasn't been a big enough deal for us to really have to address it until now is basically what they're telling
me. It's not one thing. It's it's games, plural, and half the season or something of that equivalent.
Yeah. To throw back to the stats we got at the beginning on the big screen TV when we when we had Roy on the rocks.
If you want to know exactly what they were, he had 0 goals and 0 assists and 33 turnovers in his last 9 games. I wrote it down.
Yes. And see, that's another one of those moments of like, yeah, if you hit pause and take a good look, like you're gonna pick up some stuff. From there, so they're in the middle of pitching Ted on this time to bench Roy concept. They're trying to sell it to him. Ted gets gets a text from the boss, so he heads up to Rebecca's office, where Rebecca sort of looks like she's taken the Adderall of several children. And
well, and this scene is her I'm not okay moment for the same thing that we saw with Ted earlier. Yep. Again, reflections all over the place. These yes. scenes rhyme, and you know, you immediately know she's not okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As Ted does, he's like, he just sort of looks at her baffled. Like, are you okay? Like, he's trying to be sincere about like, because he knows this is not like, you know, regular Rebecca. Mm-hmm. So she panics and hits eject and like tells Ted, we need to talk later. And he's all right, cool. So he leaves and Rebecca's about to bail. Yes.
In reverse order, like
he does rewind.
He rewinds himself out of the room, which I like. I don't know. I think about Rebecca and her seeing that and what must be going through her head as she watches Ted rewind himself out of the room, and you know, because she is such a straight-laced person, like proper person, mm-hmm. and watching her watch him is just like, okay. You know, this is different.
Yeah, I think in my mind, I think that she has a certain amount of appreciation for him, in that that's a silly thing, because we heard from her friend that the woman that Keeley's been hanging out with is not Rebecca. And that Rebecca used to be silly and fun and sing Do You Want to Build a Snowman Through the Door at her daughter and all these other sorts of things about how like Rebecca used to be fun and interesting. And so like this woman, you know, Keeley, like, you know, she's fine, but she's not Rebecca. So if you like this one, you will love real Rebecca, is sort of how the conversation goes. And I wonder if there's a certain part of Rebecca that's like, ooh, you know, next time I see Nora, I can rewind out of a room. And like, that's a tactic I'm going to use, you know, like hearing people go, you know, after I watched the episode where Ted's family comes to visit him, you know, the next time I saw my nephew or whatever, and he said, hi, I went, he can talk, you know, stuff like that. Like the same sort of thing. Like I'm filing that away for later. That might be fun. So I did enjoy those. So Rebecca attempts and fails in spectacular fashion to apologize to Ted. And then Rupert shows up because her day wasn't going well enough already.
Oh, this and scene.
And just flays her on film. It's brutal to watch. And, you know, and I figured out what it is this time through. I don't even know what number I'm on now. But the thing about it that I think is so brutal is seeing how much he likes what's happening.
Yes, he enjoys. He enjoyed every moment of this conversation, and every word is a well-placed dagger, straight down to pulling the punch on not wanting to have kids with her.
Yeah,
and like that pulled punch is, I don't think I've ever hated someone on screen like that before. it is the full on Madeline Kahn flames on the side of my face moment. And it's just a, Now I have a confession to make, friends. I didn't like bond with Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So I have no fond memories of Anthony Head. And now I only have like bitter hatred. Now I know it's his job, and like, and I know he goes to bed on at night on a giant pile of money. So like, good for him. But like, I hate the man so much in this moment.
And I will say, I did read interviews where Hannah Waddingham said like he was lovely, and he would come and like sit with me in between, you know, and be like, are you all right? Like, I know, like, I'm being horrible to you. You know, and you know, like, are we, and would like, was trying to sort of soften it and stuff, like whenever they had to do some of that stuff, like with the gala, the same sort of thing, that he would try to make sure that that wasn't sort of something that she was having to carry around with her all the time. And so I'm glad that Anthony Head is a lovely human being, but I really don't know how hard it will be to keep from punching him in the face if I ever come across him in the world. And it's because of this, like, 90 seconds right here.
Yeah. It's every word's a dagger. Mm-hmm.
I thought we could be mature about this, he said. Oh. God, he is mature. He's the worst. Yeah.
After accusing her of wearing a very youthful dress, now he needs for her to be mature. Like, oh my, yeah. Aline, you were gonna jump in there.
Well, I was gonna say, even though we don't see their marriage, we hear about their marriage. And I think this is a slice of it, right? Like, we hear about how Rebecca used to be this, like, this bubbly, effervescent person. And she turns into... I think what many people would call like a shrew, because she is driven by hatred and revenge, and she is going to do the only thing she can think to do to hurt this man, and she doesn't care who she takes with her. But we see also in this interaction how insidious emotionally abusive relationships are.
Yes.
Yep.
And in the episode where they go karaoke and we hear about how Rebecca used to be, Sissy talks about how it's all on Rebecca. She should have done better, blah, blah, blah. And I really took issue with that scene, because when you're in an abusive relationship, the whole point is a loss of agency, and agency being taken away from you.
Yeah.
And I feel like this series so far has been about her figuring out how to reclaim that agency and how to be true to herself, and how to act in a way that makes her feel empowered. And I think the reason I love this episode so much, because this is my favorite episode of the season, I love it because this is where we see her reclaim, like, this sounds really hippie, we see her reclaim her power in this episode.
Yeah, that's totally the truth.
Yeah, and I love it because it's her taking responsibility and apologizing and figuring out how to do better going forward. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think that it's just really, really well done in this episode. And I think the scene really sticks a pin in bringing all of that together.
Well, and, you know, we turn from the hard scene into the apology between her and Ted, and where, you know, she owns what's hers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's, you know, something I take from, you know, conversations with my dad when I was, you know, in high school and stupid, was that, you know, you've got to own what's yours. And this is a scene where she owns what's hers. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, you know, we get the divorce is hard. And that, what this show gives us is people who are at their best selves.
They're trying to move them. Best possible. Come on.
And we've all had those moments where we wanted to be our best selves, but we weren't. Mm-hmm. And I think that this show gives us that ability to channel that kind of personal integrity, I think, is what it comes down to channel those better moments going forward. And that's what I took away from this whole series, is that to be your authentic self in these moments is to show care and to show grace and to show just a greater appreciation of the peopleness of it all. And I love this scene so much, but can we talk for one quick second? How does Ted have a silver MacBook Pro? I mean, yeah, does anybody buy them in silver?
I do.
Mine is.
I'm kidding, but yeah. I mean.
I know. Well, okay. To be fair, Tom is directly responsible for the space gray ones sitting right over there on my desk right now.
True.
See, the thing about the space gray ones is they get scratched and you see the silver underneath. So if you get the silver, you don't have to worry about that.
Well, see, I already had a space gray one. And since I have two and they look identical now, had to make sure that the other one was the other color, because there's only two, because they're never going to sell me an interestingly colored MacBook Pro, because if you want a Pro, obviously it can't be anything fun. So just to derail for a moment, Tom Bridge, Mac and Men's podcast, and I are going to have a moment about the silver MacBook Pro. And that's why.
Sorry.
It's cool. I clocked the Beats headphones, you know, about five minutes from now. Oh, yeah. So we'll talk about that too. The thing I love about this moment in my mind, because we get the walk after Rupert leaves and Rebecca is walking down to talk to Ted. My headcanon is that what she has decided to do is just lay all this out on the table. And like, Ted, you were talking about scenes that rhyme, and her talking about doing something unforgivable. Like, I have to go tell Ted this unforgivable thing and I really don't want to tell him. And when they had the conversation in Foot Locker, they were talking about, you know, Keely's like, oh, I've had to do it. Here's what happened. And like breaks it down. And she's like, I did it and I'm not dead. And, you know, everything was fine. And I feel like Rebecca goes and tells Ted because at that moment, in the moment, she doesn't feel like she has anything else to lose. But I also feel like there's part of her that sort of wants to somehow, whether it's with Ted or not, she wants to save this. And she really does care about AFC Richmond because of all those other people, because she even says in her apology, all of you good people who are trying to make a difference. And like, I pooped on all of that. And when she points that out, I feel like in that moment, she decides instead of ruining the club, she wants to start winning so that it's successful without him, because that is the thing. Because his idea of success is like, I'm breeding now, like I'm a character from the Bible, like he's like she accuses him, which I thought was delightful. So I feel like she decides she wants to win. And so she really cares and it matters to her what happens. And so that's why she has to go. That's why she kicks off the apology tour, is because like she wants to put everything together and actually take a run at doing her best at doing this instead of doing her best to pull it all apart. And so I really like that. And I love the moment between them. Like, if I have to condense all of it down, it's Ted gets up and looks her in the eye and says, I forgive you. And she just looks completely bewildered and says, why? And like that, like 5 seconds maybe, is such a nice moment. It's like you were talking about, Tom, you know, trying to be your best self, but in a terrible, terrible, terrible moment. And she just lays it all out there. Like, she deals out every deck, every card from this terrible deck. And she's like, I did this and this and this and this and this and this. And all of it was to screw you. And I shouldn't have done it. And I'm sorry. And that, again, goes back to very early, the second or third episode where we get the gala, where her and Keely have a conversation about accountability and how, like, it matters that you're accountable. And if you feel bad, you know, like, you know, that's where Keely breaks up with Jamie. And says, like, do you even know what you're sorry for? You know, and he has no idea.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And I think a minor detail that kind of gets lost in the whole interaction with Rupert, who I think taught me what, gaslighting is. I don't think I quite ever understood it. And then I watched this and I'm like, I think I get it now. Like, you sound like you're saying something nice, but you're really being terrible. Okay. Yes. So I'm not
and
good at that.
And the opposite of the other, of the thing that you said last time that was also meant to be hurtful, that's another sort of pro level gaslighting move. Like when he said, that's a very nice dress. I like you're wearing it. It's very youthful, or, you know, whatever little jab he makes. But now, she needs to be mature. Like,
but he asks where Higgins is, and she says that she fired him. And he goes, "What? Higgins is first class. Maybe he'll take my offer." And I think that stuck with her because she went, "He stuck by me when Rupert was trying to steal him away. He could have left. Instead, he was tortured by me because he feels so bad of whatever part he had done in this." Like, and that's when she says, "All you good people." She's definitely talking about Higgins, whether she knows it or not. Which she figures it out about one chewed pen cap later.
Yes. And I really like that moment as well, when you sort of see the wheels turn in her mind when she sees that nibbled pen cap. It's very funny. From there, I also love the like Ted's sort of reasoning in that, like as he listens to her, you see him get a little misty, and he basically is like, yeah, divorce will mess you up. Like, I get it. And it doesn't matter which side, it will mess you up. And sticks his hand out for her to shake, and she flings her arms around him, and it's just such a nice moment between the two of them. And I really like a lot of what happens in this one, because we're getting a lot of payoff on this stuff. Like, she finally appreciates Ted for who he is. Ted has always appreciated her, but like Ted gives her back something, you know, slightly more than biscuits, I guess, you know, to give her so that like their relationship doesn't feel like him doing all the work, you know, all the time, because she's secretly being terrible. And so like this is the first genuine actual moment between the two of them, and not sort of her going, maybe I've accidentally underestimated him in some way, you know, or whatever. And like they have almost a moment, like when he has the panic attack at karaoke and she like talks him down, you know, like she starts to sort of see him as a person. And I think that's part of why there was a tipping point for her to go apologize in the first place. So I like that. We have training or practice or whatever. We all go out on the field, and this is where we
pitch, Kelly.
The pitch. Yeah, the pitch. We go out on the pitch, whatever. this is when we get our first mention of the body is a miracle. I shan't elaborate. Beard gives Ted the cold shoulder and the silent treatment, a combo Ted wishes to find out. Does that come with a medium drink or not? Which I enjoyed.
Did anybody figure out what a British owl says?
Oh, of course. It says to whom?
To whom? I figured he was going to just go with whom, and that was going to be it. And I could see it. So then he tries to tell Nate his joke. Nate pulls the classic, I just can't hear you, so I'm going to walk away while I look over my shoulder a bunch of times to see if you can tell that I'm walking away. Very subtle, Nate.
Yeah.
Super understated with his
dissing. I think that's what he's known for, is subtlety.
I think it is. He's a very understated fellow. We watch Roy come in last a bunch of times as they're doing speed drills.
Roy say fuck a lot. I mean, swear it out, Roy. I mean, that's what Ted says, and I swear it out, Roy.
I love how that shows to me what a good coach Ted is, because even though he disagreed with Beard and Nate, he still ran some drills to see if they were right. And then he saw for himself, like, oh, he's the slowest guy out here. Like, he can't keep up with anybody. And he's like, shoot.
We'll go with shoot. Yeah.
Well, that's what he says.
Sam, I have to check the explicit box either way. in my notes, it says, Beard gives Ted, capital T, capital E, the eye. And Ted agrees with him. Yep. So we have that moment. But I do like that he's sort of checking his work. Like you, Sam, I appreciated that moment of like, yeah, that's what's happening. But I also like that he, like you said, like that he was supportive of
He told him they were wrong, but then he checked. He also was like, well, I better see. I can't just blindly not listen to my guys.
Yeah, especially because both of them came, you know, threatening improv. And so he had to do something. Yeah, the I will point out that I had just finished watching this episode earlier today, and I went and got something out of the refrigerator, and a plastic container, no broken glass, plastic container, mostly full of salsa, fell out of the fridge and hit the kitchen floor, which is a white stone floor. And I channeled my inner Roy and yelled a number of horrible, horrible things. And in the back of my head, I just heard Ted going, "Swear it out, Kelly," which I did. So, yeah, I think what I love about it is that Ted's knee-jerk reaction is just support for people. Yeah. Like, and I think that's the piece of coaching that he has that I think is what sets him apart from other people. Like his immediate reaction is just, yeah, you know, do that. Like do that thing that you're very good at, Roy.
So he is very good at it too.
He really is.
Yeah.
I am kind of impressed with his profanity ability. Mm-hmm. Ted, after Ted agrees with Beard, Beard puts his sunglasses back on, and it's after practice. Ted goes and finds Roy in the stands and talks to him about a kitten and a chick that become friends.
This kind of delaying tactic is hard. Yeah. And, you know, it's so hard to hear Ted do it. And he talks about his mom doing it later, just in the same scene and, you know, just not getting down to it. Mm-hmm. And he's afraid to give the candor here. And I think that's unusual for Ted. And, you know, he's unwilling to have that conversation with Roy, and that hurts.
Well, he's caught between his words. He's caught between what he told Roy and what he saw of Roy. And I think that's a hard place for Ted to be.
It's a hard place for any coach who has to make that call.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, Ted, it shows that Ted's not immune to it. And, you know, the not wanting to have that conversation is very clear to Roy. Roy gets it immediately. And Roy is angry as hell at Ted. And this is one of those few scenes that's like righteous anger. Where, you know, we get a lot of that fury. We got it from Rebecca earlier in the episode. We're getting it here from Roy.
Yeah.
And it's just a reminder that, you know, sometimes when people are who they aren't supposed to be, I think is probably a good way to phrase it. You know, we get this kind of, you know, outburst, and it's just, and it's righteous. And in this moment, I mean, Roy is right to be angry.
Yes. But it is another of the handful of moments of anger, like actual anger that we get out of the episode. I mean, Roy swears a lot, but a lot of times there's no fury behind it, I'll say. Indignation, a lot, but not a lot of fury.
And I kind of wondered, it made me wonder, I wonder how accurate, like how often this is what the conversation is like when you're putting somebody on the bench for the first time. Because it really is true what he says later. Like most of these guys have been, I mean, unless you're like Alex Smith and Reggie Bush is on your high school team, you've been the best player on your team everywhere you've been. And so to get, and then especially to get to a place where you're a pro and a champion and an MVP, like you've been getting your ass kissed for playing the sport for 15, 20 years and making millions of dollars. And you're getting to this point where it's probably ending faster than you saw it coming. You thought you were going to play till an older age. And I feel like this kind of mirrors a famous scene in a famous sports movie of the manager having to cut the player in, of course I'm blanking, Bull Durham, when this is the hardest job a manager has, where he has to cut the player, and he does it to the rookie in the beginning and he does it to Crash at the end. And it's kind of very similar, you know, that you don't like doing it. It hurts your soul to tell him that this is going to be the way. Like he tries to soften the blow later, like, let's say you're hurt, you know, let's do this, you know. He's like, hey, I'd still like to have you, but if it'll help you, you know, whatever he can do to make it better. Cause he does, you know, he's obviously got a bond with Roy. You know, he was the first domino to fall was in that man's heart, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I think that's the other piece of why it extragrates on Ted, is that he did so much work to win Roy over, so that once he won Roy over, he could win everybody else over, like you said, you know, the dominoes. And I think that piece of it makes a big difference to Ted as well. I absolutely think Ted is a sentimental person. And I think that he has a soft spot for Roy for that relationship, because that was like the first one he really had to build. And I think that's part of where that comes from, and makes it sort of extra hard on him. Like, not just we have to bench you, you know, because it's a lot easier to bench somebody like Jamie, right? Mm-hmm. Because he's going to be a prick about it either way.
Because he's asking for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and Jamie, he's so positive. I don't think he took the job thinking, oh, while I get over there in my first year, I'm going to end a legend's career.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's, again, that's just one of those things where he's like, oh, no, there's a way around this. We can squeeze a little bit, last little bit of more juice out of the orange here. And it's like, we can't, coach.
Yeah. And I think we see a little bit of that, because I think also part of the reason, like, in my brain, I just went and backfilled a bunch of stuff, like, Roy is slow because Roy doesn't want to go full out because he doesn't want to screw up his knee, which has hurt him, which he's hurt, you know, lightly a couple of times already. That's why he's sitting in the ice. So I think there's a certain amount of him that sort of, you know, doesn't want to flame out, but also isn't really jazzed about, you know, fading away either. So
anytime an athlete suspiciously has like a bad half a season or something, I always wonder, like, I wonder if he's got a thing that he's, that the press doesn't know about, that hurts, you know. Is he pitching with a bad elbow? Is he a running back with a bad knee, you know, kind of thing. We'll find out in the off season when he has surgery.
Yeah. Yeah. The minute his team is out, suddenly he's off to, you know, physical therapy for whatever the thing is. Once we're done with Roy, who rage quits the conversation, after a bunch of accusation, we have a hard cut to Rebecca, who has discovered Higgins in his natural habitat, which includes facial hair choices and playing the upright bass. Mm-hmm. This is the second stop on her apology tour. I love how she portrays Ted in this.
Yeah.
Do you know what he did? He forgave me. The nerve.
Asshole. Yeah.
That asshole. I love. And the thing, part of what I love about it is, which is the thing I thought about later, is, you know, Tom rhyming. I keep coming back to that, but the rhyming is the thing here. Because the minute she said, he forgave me, and immediately Leslie, because remember that's his name, mm-hmm. Leslie immediately is right there with her, you know, F an asshole, right off the bat. And it gave me a very Ted Coach Beard vibe. Like, the minute Ted says anything, Coach Beard is right there with him. You know, if we meet each other in our dreams, can we pretend we don't know each other? You got it, stranger. You know, like Beard is right there with him every time. And so I really love that they end up having this relationship. And it's nice that this conversation feels sort of like the first time they've met, almost like as actual people, where they don't have all the crap and baggage of the previous relationship dynamic between them, which was Rupert. And it's really like the two of them are sitting down and having an actual conversation, you know, and Rebecca says, you know, what does Mrs. Higgins think about your beard? She hates it with a white hot intensity.
Yes.
And I think that, kind of going like you're talking about headcanon, I was thinking that maybe this was their relationship before she found out maybe he had anything to do with Rupert, that, you know, she said, we used to have lunches together, and mm-hmm. maybe this is how they used to chat with each other, is little jabs at each other, you know, the kind of coy, like, you know, that, yeah. Those little things. Like, I think that maybe it's like they broke through that. It's like, hey, he apologized and said he has heavy regret for this. She's apologized. They've kind of gotten to the other mm-hmm. side of this thing. And now we're getting to see, it's not just him groveling when she complains about Ted and he goes, unbelievable. And then you find out he's having lunch with him later.
Can we also talk about how well this scene is lit? The technical detail of really how this scene is lit is just so beautiful. And she's backlit the whole time, but you don't lose a single expression on her face, without, you know, in the coat that she's wearing, which is this beautiful, you know, almost, you know, brilliant white, not quite ivory, coat. It's such an interesting choice on the part of the DP, and respect. It is one of my favorite shots in the whole show.
It looks so good. And Higgins even mentions, like, white looks good on you. You know, she says something about, like, I'm going to be a good guy now or whatever. And he says, white looks good on you. And, like, and then, like, when he says that, we cut to her. And she's, like, sitting on this couch or chair or something. And there's this giant window behind her. And you see the beautiful backlighting. Tom's talking about, you've got the light across her face. And she just looks amazing. And then we have Higgins on the opposite, weirdy beardy, you know, the whole thing, sitting there next to his upright bass. But watching their dynamic change over the course of that conversation, you know, and Rebecca's had a fair amount of that happen just today, it seems like. So it was just really nice, you know, like you said, Sam, that their dynamic seems to sort of go back to, you know, we used to be like legitimately friendly with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she told him, I thought we were friends. And he's like, probably like, well, we were, but I just was doing what my boss told me to do. I did, you know, I was stuck on a, yeah. As you can see, it's like, they're not the most well-off family. Like, him taking this job and doing this is helping pay to fix the car that they the haven't other car. Been getting fixed, yeah. And stuff. Just things like that, where you get like the little peek behind the curtain that is the Higgins household.
Yeah.
It's interesting, Sam, that you are talking about this being going back to their old relationship when, as we were kind of setting up the scene, I was thinking about it as phase three of their relationship, where they had their relationship before, which we know was cordial and friendly, and maybe a friendship, to kind of the animosity that Rebecca harbors for him, to whatever this new relationship is. And maybe it is going back to what they had, but I would not be able to go back to an old relationship. Like, that would still be there. That experience would still be there. And so I'm wondering if season two, which we'll find out soon, is going to kind of deal with whatever their relationship is going forward.
I think I agree, Lena. I think they've evolved. I think they were friendly. What I always called it, when you are on good terms, like, you have a person who is your friend, and then also that person has a partner, and you are on good terms with that partner. I always called that being a friend-in-law. And I feel like they were friend-in-law before. Like, they were friendly, because she showed up to things. She's a wag, you know. Wives and girlfriends is a whole like entity unto itself in the UK press, particularly when it comes to football, things like that. So she would have been sort of a person on, you know, that wasn't necessarily an insider, but she wasn't an outsider. Like, you know, she would be in the press, in the owner's box, and that sort of thing. She would be at games and things like that. So I think they were probably friendly, and I think now they're actually friends. I think, like, on their own terms, they are now choosing friendship, where before they had to sort of be pleasant to each other because they had Rupert in common. And I think Leslie made a very, very good target for her rage. And so I think that's part of why she kept him around, was because she was sort of delighting in metaphorically, like, putting out cigarettes on his arm, basically, because it made her feel better, because she couldn't do it to Rupert. But she couldn't be awful to Rupert in person, but she could keep yanking Leslie around on the chain and be able to, you know, he was standing in as well. And just like, it's very similar to what she told Ted, like, I want to hurt Rupert as much as he hurt me. And because she couldn't hurt Rupert directly, like, I think he just became another target of that piece. So.
Yeah, and I think evolved is the right word, because it's not like it reverted back, but, you know, they obviously, if they were going to lunch, they could joke with each other a little bit. Yeah. And now maybe they've even gotten to a place where they can take it a step further, and they can, you know, just that last scene of the last episode, not to get into it, you can tell they've evolved to where much more respect, and they're smiling around each other, just things like that, you know.
Yeah, and one of the things I'm most looking forward to in season two is what that dynamic looks like now. So I'm looking forward to it. From here, we have the unicorn chaser of the entire episode. Roy is watching Phoebe, and brings her with him over to Keeley's house. So she's, I'm guessing, coloring. She's got a pair of little baby beets on her ears. She's very cute. She's off on Planet Phoebe.
Listening to Led Zeppelin.
Yes. Introductory Led Zeppelin, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you can get that on Masterclass. So she's listening to, she's got Led Zeppelin in her ear. And Roy finally breaks down and starts accidentally, he starts accidentally being honest with Keeley about how his whole life is football and he doesn't know what to do when that changes.
I love the point where she's like, oh, we're going to talk about something real. Awesome. Yes. Let's go down the sitting couch.
Yes. Here's a fuzzy pillow for you. Here's a fuzzy pillow for me, and go. And she's she's like prepped, right? She's like, okay, real stuff. Let's do this. And sits down to have a conversation with him. And the most adorable thing happens. Quite frankly, I'm a little upset with Apple TV Plus that this did not come with a warning that it could give people cavities, because she's just so sweet. It's horrible. She's so cute. Keeley gets Phoebe's attention. She takes off her headphones, comes over and says, you know, I like Led Zeppelin. She's like, wait till you hear Cream. And says, describe your uncle. And so, Phoebe says a number of awesome things about Roy, to which Roy decides her opinion means nothing. She's six. And the weapons grade eye roll
on
Phoebe with the pink fluffy things in her hair and then the little pink, and she's just so cute, and she just rolls them so hard. For a second I thought they were gonna stick, and she's just the cutest. And but I really love that she has all these things about Roy that are great and none of them are football. And Keeley points that out. Like, not one of the things that she said was footballer, you know, and she still thinks you're awesome.
And Roy and Phoebe's relationship is my favorite relationship the series. Just watching them interact, the day that Ted and Roy go to Phoebe's school, and then at the end when they're walking away and he just like angrily puts his hand down and she takes it and they're just kind of walking off together. I was really close to my uncle when I was Phoebe's age. Aww. And so, you know, he was not a mad, angry man like Roy is, or like Roy pretends to be. I don't know which it is. But it just, I don't know, it just warms my heart. And I really want to shout out Keeley here, because and I think I said this in the previous episode of the podcast that I was on, but she is such an amazingly empathetic, insightful person. Mm-hmm. And I love watching Keeley and Roy together. I think that her ability to take his, you know, anger and gruffness and just like, it's like a neutralizing solution, right? Like spout something off at her and she's just like, okay, and she'll say like something quippy and sarcastic back at him. But mm-hmm. I love their relationship, but I love how they evolved Keeley into someone we don't expect at the beginning, right? She's set up in the first episode to be, you know, unintelligent, just dates footballers, mm-hmm. is in it for, you know, money and clout. Mm-hmm. And what we really see is this deep, insightful woman who is confident and who props up others and who is driven to get what she wants. And I love her so much.
She's fantastic.
Think about the journey she's gone on. She went from being famous for almost being famous to now she's you know, the head like of player marketing for a major mm-hmm. sports team, and getting a percentage of like Jamie's beer deal. And all of a sudden, you know, she's going to get some of that sweet, sweet Rolo money. And so if anybody knows anything about changing careers in at a time when you didn't know you were going to, you know, she went from being a model to now like a businesswoman. She's probably like sitting there going like, hey, Dum Dum, you can be a coach. You can be an announcer. Yeah. You can be involved in this game. You could not be because you're rich. Like you have a lot of opportunity. Like you have this, take this niece to college. That's what you should do for your next 10 years or whatever. You know, it's like choose your own adventure because, you know, there's no crying in football.
Yeah, I really love the dynamic with Roy, and the thing about it is the unexpected times it shows up for me, like the intersection of Roy and anybody. So like that he knows all the words to Let It Go when they're at karaoke.
Oh yes.
which is like a tiny moment
third watch.
That just makes me laugh every time I see it. I love that. And, you know, and reading Phoebe the book, you know, we know he reads Phoebe A Wrinkle in Time. I think in this episode, I don't remember if it was this one or not, but we see him reading it again. I don't remember what he was doing, but we see him reading A Wrinkle in Time at least a second time through. At another point after he's read it to Phoebe, we see him with the book again. And it's a thing I really appreciate about Roy. And I think Roy started out sort of the same as Keeley. Like, we're just sort of getting a trope here. And we keep getting, you know, we keep peeling that onion and getting more interesting layers of him, which I appreciate very much. From there, we head off to the pub. Beard's former lady is playing chess with another man right in front of him.
Just brutal.
Your game.
It's brutal. He gets a reminder from pub regular Paul that he's a beautiful man.
Yes.
I loved Paul. That little pep talk moment. Paul is my favorite of the three. Like the other two are sort of funny, but Paul always makes me laugh because he's the one that's like smiley and like waves at Coach Beard, you know, when he goes by, like, nice night for it, you know, and the other two are like, don't talk to him, you know. And their dynamic just cracks me up. Ted sits down in front of a row of pints, which Coach Beard has lovingly set up for him. This is when Beard snaps. We get another flash of anger from somebody, righteously so, I think. It does matter. Winning does matter. It is important.
Well, and I love the conversation there between Ted and him, which essentially says, well, who put the firecracker up your butt and lit it? And his answer is immediate and violent, which is you did. You turned me on to what this means and what this matters. And I love the conversation where he basically says, if you are going to get put a player's feelings in front of a coach's duty, and oh man, he reads him for filth. And it's so freaking perfect because he is so right on the money here. And he is putting one player's feelings in front of the entire franchise's consequences. And it is right on the money and perfectly honest. And he's absolutely right about what a coach's responsibility is in that moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's great how he brings May into it.
Oh yeah.
Isn't it fucking right, May?
And points and men. Doesn't even look at her, just points and nods.
I feel like, cause he's almost pointing to the entire town. Saying, hey, look at this whole fan base is they're ready to get behind you, but you have to understand that for them to actually make this work, you got to care about winning too, because they care about winning and I care about winning and these players do. And he says, it has consequences. So,
well, he points out the dynamic too, that these are professionals, that he's messing with people's lives here. This
these aren't
isn't
students anymore.
G. Willikers, the college team didn't make it to the playoffs. This is a very, very different situation. And I think I feel like maybe Ted wasn't quite as invested in those consequences necessarily until Coach Beard breaks it down, like, these are grown-ups, this is an actual professional sport, this isn't something that kids in college are doing and hoping to make professional, you know what I mean? So I really appreciated that. Beard again, someone rage quits a conversation with Ted. Beard is trying to leave dramatically and is stopped by his former lady, who says was the sexiest thing. Sam, you phrased it very well right at the top of the show.
I was just so happy to hear my name announced in an incomparable show, so I had to get it out. But that whole thing's great, you know. He says, "Get your things."
Yeah,
he's been toying with you. Checkmate, mate. It's just, the whole thing is just great. It's just why you love Coach Beard.
That entire interaction was just delightful. I did like the whole thing, I liked that maybe they get back together. I don't know.
They did that night.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. I hope they're back together and not just hooked up. Like, I mean, it'll be fun. We'll find out, right? Like, maybe we'll get some more little Coach Beard details. Next season, that'll be fun too. Apparently, left to his own devices and pints, Ted put a hurtin' on several, if not all of them, and wobbles out the pub. Looks the wrong way for traffic, goes to step out in the street, an arm stops him, and it's Roy. Dun, dun, dun. So Roy shows up, Roy apologizes, and says he shouldn't have told Ted where to stick it, more or less. We get a nice moment where we find out that what Roy has is not a nut allergy, but a finger allergy,
the whole thing, you know, because if you look at where Ted talks about the jar of peanut butter on the counter,
yeah,
like Roy is not horrified about this.
No, Roy's like, that's a great idea. Roy's like, that's a good idea.
If I didn't have a spouse, I would have adopted this practice by now. But unfortunately, I have a fiance, and she would not allow that many dips of fingers into peanut butter.
Yeah, no.
Now, see, and my stance is like, you just get a spoon. I know that's slightly less tasty, but you know, it keeps the other people in your house happy, right? Sam, this is what's called compromise. When you get married, you're going to do this a lot. Love the old married lady on the show.
See, as you can tell, this was filmed pre-COVID, so you have to take more precautions when it comes to the peanut butter than you used to.
A few, yeah. I love this moment between the two of them. Like, we see they too have had their moment, and they're getting past it. This is where we get some options. They talk about, like, you could say you're hurt. Like, you know, you don't have to be hurt, but we could say you're hurt so that maybe it's not so bad. So it's like a no harm, no foul kind of thing. Like, you've been hurt before, so we could just not have you play because you're hurt. We reaffirm that ice cream is the best. That was another very important point that I got personally from this conversation. Ice cream is the best. Of course, we had ice cream and it was great. Ted makes some tea for both of them, which I did think was a weird choice. I really thought for a minute that Ted's was going to just be hot water so that he didn't have to drink the pigeon sweat. He does beg Roy to level with him that this is like a joke on a national scale, right? Like, you guys don't actually enjoy this, right? I'm just waiting for someone to give Ted tea with sugar and see if that changes his perception at all. Or maybe milk and sugar, you know. I keep wondering that, says the woman with an entire cabinet in the kitchen dedicated to tea. I feel like there are probably options out there that maybe he just hasn't explored yet.
That's the thing. Like, are they giving him Earl Grey all the time? Like, what tea is he getting here?
See, and I've wondered that too.
I wondered if they were giving the American, like, Lipton bags. Because, like, I mean, you know, there's proper tea over in Britain. And, you know, you get the various Yorkshire teas. And, you know, is it a PG Tips kind of situation? And, you know, like, there's the whole thing there. But I'm guaranteeing you they're giving him Lipton bags as, like, a way to troll him.
And that I could believe someone would take as, like, you're joking. Sweat. You think this is something people drink, like, for real, right? I do have a British friend who told me that, and I quote, "I don't believe in Earl Grey tea."
No.
She's strong opinions. Hi, Charlotte. We get to the end of the show. This is one of my favorite moments in the entire season. We're back at Biscuits O'Clock. Here comes Ted with a little pink box. He shows up. There's Higgins at Rebecca's side, as it should be. We have a very exciting moment. And then we head to the locker room. There's no Roy. Nate comes up and apologizes for treating Ted poorly. They have a moment. This is where we get the, like, I had a dream I was pecking you like a bird. And so that's where we get the moment of Ted saying, well, it'd be nice if you'd, it'd be really nice if you'd apologize in Dreamland too, you know, just so we're good here and there. And then Roy appears, and Roy is super duper fired up for practice. And as everyone wanders out to the pitch, the credits roll. And as the credits roll, you see everybody sort of leave, and they all leave. And the last person out is Roy. And as he's leaving, Roy goes up and hits the Believe on the way out the door. And then the whole thing goes to black. It's so beautiful.
It is absolutely transcendent. This is my favorite scene of the show. The whole thing. And, you know, I love so many moments in this show, but this is the moment I love most. And the Roy putting himself together, and all of the players kind of, you know, having their pre-training adventures in the locker room. And then Ted walks back into his office and then back out. And then it's just Roy, and he just goes up and he puts his hand on the sign. And that moment is pure unfettered magic. And it will cure a bad day for me. That is just, it is this moment of belief, and it is Roy believing in himself. It is Roy believing in Ted. It is Roy believing in that there is life after football, and I'm going to find what it is. And you know, I don't have that kind of closure with my own athletic adventure. I was a competitive swimmer for a long time. And you know, when you're done, you're done. Like, you just, that's just it. You don't know when your last race is. And you know, I don't have that moment where, you know, I can just go slap the sign and be done. But like, you know, it was just over. And, you know, for Roy to kind of come to terms with all of that, it is just a thing of silent beauty. And, you know, it's another classic case of Marcus Mumford nailing the music, which he's done throughout the entirety of the show.
We have a number of those moments. Yeah.
Yeah.
This episode and number 10 are the two where I think that really makes a lot of difference.
Oh, yeah.
It just speaks to the embarrassment of riches that this show has. Like, it's constantly better than it deserves to be. Like, you're like, oh, it's a sports comedy about a cartoon, an advertisement character. And you go, okay. But then, I mean, it's like,
if you watch them, he kind of is a cartoon.
Yeah, and I feel like there's a lot of beautiful shots in this episode. I mean, you mentioned the Rebecca walking, like her feet going down the stairs to walk in, and walking past the clubhouse where guys are naked and they're all embarrassed, but she's got this laser focus.
She doesn't even see the butts.
They practically almost did the Spike Lee like dolly shot of her going down.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you mentioned the lighting in the other scene, the ending scene, and then the one that stuck out to me, which is silly, but just because I'm kind of noticing more composition because I'm shooting more film for social media and stuff now, was the peanut butter scene. Because the way they have Ted stage, they're just having a conversation, but then when it shows Roy, he's stuck off in the corner and the arm comes in the side with the peanut butter, and he's just like, no. And just little things like that where I'm like, the cinematography is good, the lighting's good, the music's good, the writing's good, the act, it's like, god, what is the catering bad? Is anybody half-assing it on this production? Because everybody's just killing it as far as I can see.
So, one day craft services only had decaf. I think that's the tragedy of Ted Lasso. Right? Like, once. Yeah, the thing about the peanut butter scene that I also love is that it's like they're repellent magnets. Like, as the arm comes in with the peanut butter, Roy moves away from it, like in perfect synchronization. And I really enjoy that moment. And like, this show has so many of those little moments like that you know, where when you go back through, like the first time through, I don't think I clocked that at all. But then watching them move in perfect parallel back and forth. Like, that was great.
That's my judgment of a great show, is that you can watch it and see stuff again. Like, I'm on like my seventh Sopranos rewatch, and I'm still noticing new little details here or there. And so, you know, whether it's The Simpsons or this or something, I probably watched Ted Lasso 3 or 4 times through now, because it's just, I was going to rewatch it for this, and then I rewatched it early because I was having a bad week, and I was like, I need some positivity, and just started watching Ted Lasso.
Oh, that's what I do too.
I had too many complaints on social media about how my company was the worst or something, so I was like, okay, I gotta cleanse the palate here. And so I just watched him be positive for an hour a day and was like, okay, that's better. Yep.
I did that too. I'm with you. And I will give it the review. People who listen to I Want Mam CU TV will know that Mr. Kelly does not tolerate a lot of television as a general rule, so how I'm on like 3 different TV podcasts is a mystery. When we were watching it, we came in on the middle. And I think, and Ted or Tom, you were one of a number of people who were like, are you watching this? Because it comes out once a week, and you should be. If you're not, you should be. And so then I think we came in on like the 3rd episode. So I was like, sit and watch this with me. It's half an hour. And it's the guy that did Scrubs. And I know like Scrubs didn't actively anger you, so like, let's see if it's fun. Right. Like, I had watched it, and then I was like, maybe Mr. Kelly will want to watch it with me. And so we sat down and we watched it. And then he was like, well, is this the only one? And I said, no, there's, and I said, no, there's more. And so then we watched like the next 2. And then he was like, okay, so like, why did you exit? Why aren't we watching the next one? And I'm like, it doesn't come out till Wednesday, you know, or whatever it was. And he was like, well, damn it. And I'm like, what has happened? Like, he's into this. I don't know what's going on. So
I don't know whether to be happy or excited that it's weekly, because there's part of me that really does enjoy the weekly drops the way that Disney Plus does it, because you get to enjoy individual episodes and watch them a couple of times and you know, fall in love with each one, whereas opposed to where I consume this in like a week. And so I'm kind of liking that, but there's part of me that's also like, I want the whole thing right now. So I guess I'm getting indoctrinated to the Apple TV. I don't even
TV Plus.
Considering we call ourselves Watchers the Plus of all the different things, I should know what the Apple one's called. But there's just so many pluses and all these different acronyms. It's hard to keep up. And I had to watch Peacock all weekend to watch the Giants. It's ridiculous.
Oh yeah, Peacock. I think this is probably one of my favorite of the whole series. And part of the reason is because we're starting to get the callbacks and things. We're starting to get the rhymes. We're starting to get not like wrap ups, but we're getting to sort of a resolution point in something and then seeing where it goes and sort of setting up some of that season 2 dynamic. And so that's part of what I like about this episode, is the things it gives us to look forward to. Aline, how about you?
Sorry, how about me? What?
What about this episode? I know you said this is your favorite of the series.
I just love it because there's a lot of honesty in it. And I know we talked about that previously, but I am a pretty blunt, honest person. My husband is a blunt, honest person, and I like that a lot about our relationship, that I can tell him anything. I don't like, we're never unkind, but we don't pull punches. And I appreciate that in relationships, when I can be really honest with somebody. Again, not unkind, but I know that what I'm getting is honest and true and not deception. And we finally have hit that point in this episode where Rebecca is being honest with everybody and honest with herself, really. And, you know, I just really appreciate that. And I do also appreciate how they're setting things up going forward, because I had a thought about halfway through the season, as much as I was enjoying it, I didn't want to watch season after season after season of Rebecca being the like kind of reluctant big bad. And I'm glad that we got this resolution to that motivation and that chapter of the story. And I like that it happens before the last episode too, that they set it up in advance, and that then we kind of get to see the payoff in the last episode, and it doesn't feel like things are coming from left field.
Yeah.
But
we
really
earn a lot of things in the next episode, right in this episode.
Yeah. But really, I love that this is an episode about Roy, because I think Roy is such an interesting character. And it's not that he's charismatic, and it's not like, I don't know what it is about Roy. There's something about like this grumpy old man persona that I really enjoy in fiction. And I really love Roy. Like, I would hate him in real life. I would not want to associate with him at all, you know, but I really love Roy as a character. And I love Roy and Keeley together. I love Roy and Phoebe. I love seeing all of this happen. I don't know. It's just, I really enjoy it. And, you know, every episode is good. There is not a dud this season. And so when I say it's my favorite, it's not like this is head and shoulders above the rest, because they all have something great in them. But I think it's a really satisfying payoff for a lot of the things that happen. It's a really satisfying, really resolution, so that the next episode can set up what's going to happen next.
Well, and I love that they don't necessarily break the beats into clear episode markers all the time, because you know, in a lesser sitcom, they'd have ended the previous episode at the dart scene. Like they'd have just gone out there, but that's not where they left it. And, you know, I think that it just shows such a depth. It's such a confidence in what they have to say and how they want to say it, that they are not going to break things like a traditional sitcom breaks them. And that's Bill Lawrence at his finest. And, you know, it's such a baller move. And, you know, this show, I think, is, I mean, without a question, my favorite. But the one that it replaced was Sports Night, in which, you know, was a two and a half season Aaron Sorkin drama, or Aaron Sorkin dramedy, from, you know, the late 90s, you know, and it doesn't hold up as well as I'd like it to. But there are some absolutely sparkling moments in there, and there are some duds. But this show has no there's just no quality drop in the entire thing. It is such a high level from the get go, and he just puts the hammer down and just goes.
I totally agree. I have a hard time picking a favorite episode. I mean, maybe Trent Crim, The Independent, is just a great one, just because of them eating the food at the end.
Yes, you need food.
The article written over the top is just so great. Yeah. You know, the narration and everything. But honestly, it's tough to pick, because there's parts of every episode I love. There's lines from every episode I love. There's lessons from every episode I love. Even this one, just talking about callbacks, I just thought of one that I didn't notice, you know, in my notes, was that when Roy stops Ted from going into the traffic, it's the same thing that Beard did in the first episode.
Yep.
And so I wonder if that's foreshadowing that he's going to be a coach on the squad next year or a year from now when he's done playing or something like that, that he's the next disciple of the Ted Lasso apostles.
And, you know, we think a little bit about, you know, I think for me, this is like a top three, but I feel that 7, 8, and 9 are a triptych in that regard. And they're very much of a piece. And then we get the, you know, the 10th and final episode, which kind of sets us up for everything that it is the climax of that last act. But I mean, of the soccer season, at least.
Yeah. But it doesn't feel like the most important, feel like what we got here was really like the climax of the season. And then the next one is almost like a post-credit scene that helps set up what we have next, almost, like, in a way, because it's all based around that particular ball game, and we don't get a lot, you know, we don't get a lot of other stuff that necessarily happens in that one, because it's all sort of dealing with that one game and like what happens with that one game. And so we don't really see a whole lot of follow-up to any of the stuff that happened in this episode, which we got. So I thought that was interesting. The thing I like about this show a lot is, you know, you were talking about the writing we get and the cinematography we get, and, you know, Tom talking about like plot points and breaking a story in a particular way. And the thing I like about this is not only did they have the confidence in themselves to do this in an unusual way, to make the decisions they made in how things were going to be revealed and how things were going to actually go, but to do so with enough faith that the audience will go with them on that trip.
Yeah.
And I love a show that will give the audience credit. And that's one of the things that I really like about some of the crazy theory shows out there, like Westworld, dear to my heart for a bunch of reasons. And one of the things I love about it is that it gives me as an audience member enough credit to not hit me over the head with a plot sledgehammer every 10 minutes to make sure I'm keeping up. And we're just going to let y'all figure it out on your own and see what happens, you know. And that's the thing that I love in a show. And in this case, it's not like crazy theories or having to put together a bunch of weird dots based on some screenshots and turning into Charlie from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, you know, in that gif. But it's more about like just believing that people will be able to recognize some part of themselves in what Ted is doing, in what Beard is doing, in what Rebecca is doing, in the good things that people do and in the terrible things that people do, that people will see themselves in those situations or in the things those people are doing or in the tactics that they're using against other people, and see, oh, that thing I did that time, like that resonates with me. You know, Aline was talking about her uncle and you know, being close to her uncle and that being something that particularly resonated. And like, you know, all of us have done, like Tom, you were talking about being in high school and being dumb and, you know, and your dad having to help steer that a little bit. And like, we've all sort of had like, If you say to somebody, like, take a second and think about your worst moment, like everybody has one. Some people have 10, you know, or whatever. And so having the faith in the audience, that the audience will want to come with them on this. And I think the other thing about this that was really nice was seeing a bunch of people really not be okay, yeah. Which you don't get a lot, particularly in something that is being marketed as a comedy, like, you know, everything in a comedy is haha funny and everything's fine. And you're not supposed to have, you know, it's from the guy that did Scrubs. So you should know a little bit, you know, on the vaguest of terms of what you've signed up for if you're going to watch this. But I think that part is particularly interesting.
It's funny when I try and sell this show to people, I say it's the funniest show that will make you cry at about the end of half the episodes.
Yep.
You know, I don't always make it to the end, Sam. Yeah. Yeah,
it punches you in the feels on the regular, and like it's very good at it. And yes, you know, it's I feel like I watched 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 on the train home today, and then I came home and watched Luca, and you want to talk about getting punched in the feels all day long?
Oh, no,
it has been amazing, and I feel like it's excellent for like, you know, my well-adjusted self. But to think about these plots, to think about these people, to think about these characters, it is just such a wonderful time to spend in their world and to spend in their orbit and to watch them be good to each other in difficult moments, that it's a reminder that we can all do better in those difficult moments, and I'm here for that. So
yeah, I really enjoyed it. So I hope you have enjoyed sitting and listening to us nerd way the F out about episode 9 of Ted Lasso. I would like to thank my lineup for making it through both halves with me, with minimal halftime. Aline, thank you so much for coming by.
I'm so glad I got to talk about this with you.
Me too. I'm so glad you were here. Also with us, interesting facial hair choices notwithstanding, Sam Adams.
Second team's going to kick first team's fucking asses today.
Thank you so much, Sam. Tom Bridge, the Mac and Mince podcast. I'm sorry I didn't introduce you first so that you didn't have to follow Sam again.
It's time for us to go out like Willie Nelson on a high.
That's fair. I like that. I'm your host today, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you again later. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.